there is something about training camp, the NFL being open today. Just whip around and seeing all the different camps. Gosh, football is here. Fan day in Lincoln tomorrow. Camp starts on Friday. 4 weeks from Saturday, the college football season is back, and your summer is over, and back is Scott Shanley. As the former player, what's it like to sit and watch players go through training camp these days?
You know what? It's funny you ask that, because I was just on a big text thread last night with a bunch of guys I played with the Saints, and we always stay in touch. And one of them is now assistant offensive line coach Zach Scrieff, and I was asking him when camp officially starts, because there's no more time that I enjoy retirement more than when I know the first day of camp is arriving. It feels good to know that I don't have to report to that dorm or practice in that 120-degree weather on Airline Drive in Metairie, Louisiana. It feels really good. Now, when the season rolls around, you miss those times. But training camp is it's almost like a season in itself.
All right. So walk me through the Scott Shanley that walked into your first training camp. What was that? The Rams in 2003?
Yeah, I mean, it's astonishing how little I knew about what the NFL was, what I was getting myself into. I mean, I walked in, there were 90 guys going to training camp, and I just thought, hey, this is the team. And then I quickly learned, no, we're going to cut this from 90 to 53. We may keep five linebackers. And so you start looking around the room like, okay, well, I think I can beat that guy out. That guy's a starter. So you start doing a number count, and you quickly adapt to the profession that's at hand. And you go from, you know, you went from high school to college, and you deal with that big jump, and then you go from college to NFL, and you quickly learn that there's a lot of things that are different. So I remember going to that first training camp just being very nervous, not really knowing what to expect. I had already gone through rookie mini camp and offseason OTA, so I knew everybody. But it was a whole different game going through the NFL training camp, the two-a-days, the rigors of waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, getting back to your dorm room at probably 10:30, 11 at night, going to bed. Those days felt like weeks sometimes.
What was the best, what was the most important thing that you took every year to training camp?
Most important thing.
Because I'm seeing guys walk in with TVs and mini fridges and pillows and, like, you know, electronics, their video games. What was the thing that was became a must-have that you had to take to training camp every year?
For me, I think it was probably a foam roller, something like that. I think a foam roller is like every athlete's Bible in some ways. You have to have that thing with you at all times, because something is going to be sore. Something's going to be hurt during training camp. And I remember many times we were in Jackson, Mississippi for some training camps, and those were brutal. Sitting on my cold dorm floor, rolling out an injured hamstring or quad or something that was bruised or sore. And so I think if there was one thing that I didn't forget that I always had to have, it was a foam roller or just one of those massage roller sticks.
I don't know if you've seen this or not, but number 12 is back in Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about him. A lot of people spent a lot of time talking about him. There's always a chance that somebody can move on. There's always a chance that somebody can retire. And certainly there's always a chance somebody can be traded for any value that's thrown out there, a big-time trade value. So, you know, but if you would have made me guess, I'm not surprised. It would be hard to think of the MVP of the NFL retiring at the top of his game. It would be hard to think of the MVP of the NFL playing for another team a year after the way he played. And there's a lot of things that go on in organizations that people don't see, and that relationship is strained between Aaron and the GM. But I also think I know Aaron has this deep of personality, and people either love him or they hate him. A lot of people don't like him. But I really think at the core of it that Aaron is a good teammate, and he feels accountable to his teammates. And when he sat down and he thought about his grief and his angst and his gripe with the GM, he thought, but there's 52 other guys that are relying on me to win a Super Bowl and win a championship. And I think that is what ultimately pulled him back to Green Bay.
We're seeing, whether it be the GM or the owner or the Mark Murphy, they said the communication wasn't good. I mean, it kind of goes back to Jordan Love, maybe some players that got away. Rodgers says, hey, why don't you bring back Randall Cobb? Boom, Randall Cobb is on his way to Green Bay. And the Randall Cobb the last couple of years in Houston was better than his last 2 years in Green Bay. So, I mean, this may work out really well. But the conversation has become, has he earned a place at the table? Green Bay says yes. And then people start talking about control of as a quarterback. What kind of a control do you have? Do you give them the keys to a franchise? That's never been the case in Green Bay. But you would know this. I think people are bringing up Tom Brady in Tampa and then Drew Brees in New Orleans. Did Sean Payton give the keys to the offense to Drew Brees?
Oh, without a doubt. I think I say that because I saw the evolution of the Drew Brees when he got there in 06 and was still rehabbing his shoulder. And certainly Drew didn't have the keys. The keys weren't close to him. They were all in Sean's pocket, and he didn't relinquish that until Drew showed the type of player he was becoming. And we all know Aaron Rodgers has been this type of player for a long time. And I think he's earned the right to have some say in the organization. Not when it comes to, you know, major decisions, but I certainly think if he says he wants Randall Cobb, go out there and see if you can get Randall Cobb, because he's earned that right to tell you who he wants around him. And just like in New Orleans, as Drew emerged, I would say after that 06 season, when he played really well and was the leader of our team, no question leader, I think you start to see the head coach give more control. And then when he starts to play really well, 07, 08, he's starting to look like the Drew Brees that we all remember. I really think there were a lot of times where Coach Payton said, you know what, if you see something that you like, go ahead. And he never questioned him. And I think when you have that relationship between a head coach and a quarterback, that's powerful.
There was, it might have been Jeff Saturday on ESPN was talking about Brees. And again, you may or may not know this being on the other side of the ball, but he was saying that Drew Brees, the play calling, Sean Payton would give Drew Brees two plays or two options on every play, and he would just let him choose. Does that sound close to being correct?
Yeah, 100%. I would even go a step further. You know, Sean would if anybody ever wants to hear one of Coach Payton's play calls, just YouTube Drew Brees Saints play call and how long they are, just how much verbiage there was. And it took a very cerebral and high football IQ to be able to run that offense. But he would give him plays. He would give him dummy plays, auxiliary audibles. But I really believe Drew had many more than two options. Every time he came to line of scrimmage, I can tell you so many times we lined up and we would do ones versus ones in practice. And he would go through the playbook. I mean, he would shift out of different formations. He would do different things. And so I think because of Drew's knowledge of the playbook and how long he'd played there, that nothing was off limits. If you had the right personnel package in there, you could do anything you wanted because Drew had that type of command over the playbook.
Scott Chantley joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. Let's go around the NFL a little bit. Not very far from here in St. Joe, Kansas City is open training camp. And, you know, in the offseason, they fixed their offensive line so they wouldn't be caught in the situation they were at the end of the postseason last year. They went out and they made a deal to get Orlando Brown. How much of a challenge is it going to be for a guy like Orlando Brown that played in the Baltimore Ravens system, all of a sudden comes to Kansas City where he's going to have to pass protect maybe 200 or more reps this year, not even close to what he had to do with Lamar Jackson? How much of a transition is that going to be for him?
It's going to be a huge transition. And I think, you know, if anybody has seen Orlando Brown, or if you don't know what this man looks like, he is a mammoth of a man. And just to run around him would take 3 seconds. So you'd like to think the ball would get out before somebody could even run around him, because he is massive. But there's a big difference between run blocking and being in a run-oriented offense and having to pass block and go back and block defensive ends, pass rushing specialist defensive ends more often than not, because that's what he's going to do in the Kansas City offense. So it's definitely going to be a change, but I think the type of player he was at Oklahoma and the type of player Baltimore expected him to be when they drafted him that high, I really think he could still be one of the better tackles in the league. It's going to be a huge adjustment in year one, that's for sure. So it'll be interesting to see if he has that footwork and that foot speed to pass block many more times than he had to in Baltimore.
We see kind of the evolution of the game. The NFL is more willing to take stuff from college. And Matt Campbell a couple of weeks ago was talking about their defense, which they have made really, really popular, going with a 3-3-5 structure where they're using three safeties. We saw a little bit of it in the NFL last year. I think Carolina was the team that used it a lot, and they used it primarily on just passing situations. But I'm hearing more discussion that the 3-3-5 structure is going to find a foothold in the NFL. Walk me through your thoughts on a three safety formation, if it would work in the NFL, and if this is like the next step in the new defense from college.
Yeah, I think the three safety defense has been around a long time. I can tell you when I played, going all the way back to our Super Bowl year, we had three safeties on the field quite a bit. And that third safety would come in as a nickel-type player. Because what happens is if you bring a cornerback in as your fifth defensive back, teams are just going to check to the run. They're going to run the ball all day at a small cornerback sitting in the slot who doesn't want to tackle a running back. So what you do is you kind of – that's the chess match back and forth. You bring a safety in who may not be as good in coverage in the slot, but they're almost like an undersized linebacker who can tackle and are physical. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson right now is that guy with the Saints. Roman Harper did that a lot down the box for us with the Saints when I played. So I think that three safety hybrid, it's almost a new hybrid player on defense. We used to hear about tweeners all the time, and that was a guy where we didn't know if he was a DN or a stand-up linebacker. To me, the new tweener on defense is now the hybrid safety. Not quite good enough to be a full-time starting safety in a split safety look, but too undersized to be a linebacker in your standard base set. And those guys are you see them get drafted the last 2 years. Those guys are flying off the boards because you have to be able to match personnel in the NFL. Now, do I think a 3-3-5 can be a base defense and you can run that the majority of the time? I don't, because in the NFL, with three defensive linemen and three backers, you're going to have gaps in the run game. And I think teams will just scheme you and they will run you right out of the stadium. So to be in a base like that the whole time in the NFL, I don't think would work. It's more of a college type defense because you're trying to take away those plays in space more than you are in the NFL.
And easier to confuse the quarterback pre-snap than in the NFL.
Yeah, no question. And Carolina, you alluded to it. Carolina did try to do that defense a lot last year, especially early in the year. And it didn't really work well. You see Carolina they're continuing to draft defensive players. And I think some of it is with their scheme that they need to change. But they're committed to it. They keep drafting defensive guys. But they just had a lot of holes in their run game. I saw them play the Saints twice, and the Saints just kind of did what they wanted to in the running game. So there's a huge difference between the way teams are trying to run the ball in the NFL versus the way teams are trying to find a way to get in space in college.
We're speaking of space and kind of thinking about Kansas City and training camp and one less preseason game, so you maybe have a little bit more time to work on things. When you're looking at an offense and you've got a particular the player that, man, he would be great on jet sweeps or some gadget plays, how much of a challenge is that in getting those into your offense, establishing those plays? You have the player, but how difficult is it in the NFL to work on them, establish them, get them into the playbook to maximize players like that?
Yeah, I don't think it's difficult if you have a difference maker. And you saw Kansas City when they drafted Tyreek Hill. They knew he was fast. He was a little undersized. But the more they ran different plays with him, the more they saw the explosiveness. Then eventually they said, you know what, we don't care that he's short. He's a starting receiver. He's an elite receiver. And those type of players trend set. Those type of players allow other players around the league to get drafted, to make rosters that normally would make rosters because they don't fit the height and weight profile of what a lot of people are looking for at the receiver position. So I think the one thing that you have to caution against when you have players like that is not ruining the flow of your normal offense. And that debate has been around, I can tell you, in New Orleans the last couple of years. Taysom Hill being the gadget guy and Deontay Harris, who is built like a Tyreek Hill, he's super fast. They try to find different ways to get him the ball. And people, you can hear the fans groan because they feel like they're force-feeding guys too much instead of just running the natural flow of the offense. So I think you always want to find ways to get guys the ball like that. But I can tell you, the defensive player, you knew who the gadget guys were. You knew who the guys were that when they step on the field, okay, we got to watch for that guy because they're trying to find a way to get him the ball. And that's the hard part about calling plays and setting up offensive plays for guys like that.
You brought up New Orleans. Thoughts on Michael Thomas?
Listen, Michael, I don't know. I want to be frustrated with Michael because, you know, you have this ankle injury, and you sit around, you wait till June to get surgery. Now you're going to miss early part of the season, and their schedule's pretty tough, and you're breaking in a new quarterback. But I also know that Michael Thomas is one of the most competitive people I've ever seen. If anybody ever watched a Saints practice or watched the way he warmed up in pregame, he plays every snap like it's the Super Bowl. And you don't become great and set an NFL single-season record for receptions without being great and being competitive. So I really think every player, I'm telling you, their last option is surgery. Nobody wants to go under the knife. Everybody wants to see if they can heal. And I think the one thing that really hurt Michael in making this decision and making it too late was the fact that our union, the NFL union, just told players, you know what, don't show up for the offseason. Don't have a normal offseason. These guys who are recovering from injuries, they don't know what they can do. Because by a normal offseason, you would show up in late March, you would have had offseason running in April, you would have OTAs, practice without pads, four times a week for about 4 weeks. And Michael could have made this decision in April had he been out there in a normal offseason. So there's a lot of blame to go around. And I just don't think that anything was done intentionally by waiting.
We'll get you out on this because you live in that state now. Texas Southeastern Conference, how does that sound?
It's crazy. I'm telling you, I don't want to sound like the old man, but I'm going to sound like the old man. College football is changing drastically right before our eyes, and it's not for the better. I've been a long-time proponent of kids. If you're playing great on the field, that you should benefit from your last name. But I think there needs to be more restrictions placed on that. And now we've gone from that to now we're going to basically the college football becoming a farm league for the SEC conference. A lot of kids want to play in the SEC already because a lot of those kids get drafted. It's the high-profile network. ESPN runs it all the time. And there's a lot of really good football, and I've seen it. You know, covering LSU football, there are really good football teams with really good football players. But college football is dangerously becoming where these other conferences are not going to have a chance to recruit kids because every kid who can play in the SEC is going to want to go play in the SEC. And you see Ohio State's now been thrown into the mix, and they're trying to recruit all these teams to the SEC. And you're going to be left with half of the nation out west with nothing to do, getting no coverage, having a hard time to recruit. And I hate the way college football is going right now. It's changing drastically in the last 2 months.
I mean, when you were playing, we never thought we were sitting here saying Nebraska and the Big Ten or the breakup of the Big 12. It's, you know, ESPN's got a lot of money invested, and they're either going to push people out of being a fan of college football to strictly the NFL, or they're just going to ruin the experience that makes college football so special.
I think you're right. It's going to be one of those two choices. And I think, unfortunately, it's more the latter. There's something about college football where I love the program. I love the chess match. I love the evenness of the teams being matched up. My experience in the NFL was a good one. A lot of guys didn't have a good experience. So I enjoyed the NFL game more so than the college game. But if you asked 10 people, I would say 8 of those people would say they'd much rather watch college football because of the pageantry, because of alumni support and kids being amateurs and watching them compete together. And I don't know what the end game is going to be here, but I hate to see these mega conferences. And you talk about depleting the middle of the country and even the West Coast. I mean, you're splitting this nation into, hey, if you're not playing on the east side of the United States, you have no chance at recruiting. And I just hate to see that in college football.
Great stuff, Scott. I appreciate it. Welcome back. Football is here. I appreciate your time as always.
All right. Take care.
That's Scott Shanley. You know, ESPN has a master plan, and they're working in cahoots with the SEC. It's about money. It's about brands. It's about defeating your competition. But the way that ESPN, they stopped covering college football and they started running college football. Look, you have already have the bowls that are primarily ESPN-centric. And this is no fault of ESPN. They're in the business to make money. They want to make money, and they make money off college football. You have to ask yourself, with the push by ESPN in cahoots with the SEC and whatever the next step is, are they making the product better or are they tearing the product apart? Are they pushing fans away? We had the discussion yesterday. Some people they've had it. Too much change. Just don't like how the sport is, where the things that make college football so special, the regional rivalries, the road trips, the fan base relationships, all of the traditions, that stuff just doesn't happen overnight. We're seeing that in the Big Ten. Those things that I just mentioned, man, you're a decade into the Big Ten, and there's a lot of those that haven't taken hold yet. There is something about Texas having to go to Lawrence, Kansas and play a game. Ohio State having to go to Bloomington, Indiana to play a game. Nebraska going to Madison to play a game. I mean, we go on and on. Those are the things that make college football so special. At some point, we could be in trouble if college football isn't so special anymore. So is ESPN going to push you away? they going to make college football better, or are they going to tear it apart? You know, what is the end game? Because us as fans of this great sport, which at the end of the day could be the third most popular sport in the country behind the NFL and the NBA, how long are we going to hang around? Again, the regional rivalries, the road trips, the relationships with fan bases, all of the other traditions, those are unique in the college game. Those are unique to college football, a Saturday in this country. But are those going to go away? Are we going to be pushed away from the sport that we all devote a lot of time talking about, a lot of financial stuff, a lot of emotional stuff into it? ESPN is in the business. They're going to make a lot of money. And they're spending smart money to make more money. I mean, scared money don't make no money. But what are they doing to the core of the sport of college football? I think that's what a lot of people are worried about, and that's okay to be worried about. That shows you how much you love the product that is in the fall, in Saturdays, across this country, in small towns to large professional cities that host a university that plays college football. All right, mailbag is coming up next. Parker Gabriel will stop by at 1:30. He is back. Fan day is tomorrow. Media availability tomorrow. I'm sure we'll hear from the starting quarterback, who is kind of forgotten. You run through previews and they'll say, quarterback's out west. I know he hasn't been everything we've wanted, but he's a fourth-year starter, kind of as an afterthought. And I think maybe we'll get a sense the first time Adrian speaks. Some of that stuff's got to bother him. He's a competitor. That stuff's got to rub him the wrong way, being forgotten about. It would me. And that may just add another thing to what's his end game for this season. What's his driving force to this season? And then practice starts on Friday. So that's all still to come in the last 2 hours, this Wednesday edition of the Gary Sharp Show with George. Mailbag is next on 1620 The Zone.